Welcome to Reset Your Mindset with Angie Z. I'm super excited to have you here today to share inspirational stories from entrepreneurs around the world that provide you with valuable lessons and mindset strategies to enable you to play the game of life your way. Welcome to Empire Podcast. My name is Angelina Zimmerman, and today I have with me Michael Yardney, who is one of Australia's leading experts in psychology of success and wealth creation. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Angelina.
Hello. What we'd love to know is tell us a little bit about how you got started in the property industry.
Well, long before I got started in the property industry, I actually decided I wanted to become rich. I came from migrant parents. I came to Australia at the age of three. And my parents were both working class. I never missed out, but we didn't go on holidays like my friends' parents did. So my parents didn't have a car till I was in my early teens. I mean, my friends' parents all were rich and they went on holidays and they seemed to own property. My parents' friends owned property. And so I decided that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to become wealthy. And during university days, I did a part-time job. I saved up a deposit, and in my early 20s, I went halves with my parents and bought a property in Bond Street, Caulfields, for $18,000.
Oh, my goodness.
We took a 30-year loan, had no idea how we were going to pay it off, got $12 a week rent. We were excited, Angelina. That's how it all started.
That's very cool, very cool. So what led you to actually have your own company? So were you working for other people previously? Or?
I had a real job, and in the meantime I built a property portfolio and I made a lot of mistakes. I got involved in property development in the 1980s with a couple of business partners, and I was brave. I was in my 30s and I was carried away by a boom. If I'd made the same mistakes today, I'd have gone broke much sooner. But I thought I was clever. One of the worst things you can do is get it right first time. You think you're smarter than you are.
Yes.
And the world and the cycle and the economy taught me some lessons. In the 1990s, one of my mentors, an older, wiser gentleman, Tom, told me that I've actually been successful through investing, and if I helped others develop financial independence like I'd managed to, that people would be prepared to pay for that. So for close to 20 years now, we've been advising people on how to grow, protect and pass on their wealth, and it started with me at home. Then my wife left her job and it was just me, my wife and our dog, Ramsey. And now it's a team of 50 people in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane.
Oh, my goodness.
Been involved in over $3 billion worth of property transactions. And currently our property management division looks after close to $2 billion worth of assets.
Oh, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. That's wonderful. So what do you believe has been the key to your success in terms of your own mindset?
Oh, I think the key to my success was a combination of things. I was very interested in marketing early in the piece, and so I'm sure that has helped. Mm. But I think the biggest key was when I learned the power of personal development, that things aren't going to change until you're prepared to change and ready to change. And so by getting mentors around me, by paying for mentors. So some of my mentors have been virtual mentors, people I've never met or seen, but I've read their works, listened to their podcasts, watched their videos, and others I've always and still do pay for mentors and business coaches. And it's, I think, arrogant to think that you can achieve the levels other people can without getting some other advice.
Mm, yeah, good point. Good point. Because you wrote a blog the other day about Warren Buffett.
Mm. Yeah, he was one of my virtual mentors in the psychology, in the field of investing. In the field of psychology and mindset, early in the piece, I learned from Jim Rohn. Now, initially, I thought all this was a bit of metaphysical stuff and mumbo-jumbo, and I don't need to change my philosophy or my mindset or my way of thinking. I was taught to learn from your mistakes. My father taught me to learn from trial and error. But, boy, that's hard. It's demoralizing, and it's difficult. And if I've got a choice of two books to read, here's the one with all the mistakes you can make, or here's the way to get it right, why would I choose the one that says here's the way to get it all wrong and learn the hard way?
Exactly right. So just on that point and learning from mistakes, you know, with the people that you speak to on a daily basis, your clients, what do you find is the biggest mistake people are making in terms of property investment?
Well, I think wealth creation. Property investing, the biggest mistakes that they make are based on the huge amount of false news, fake news, unrealistic expectations that they get in their inbox or from the magazines. So they've got unrealistic expectations. They think residential real estate is going to get them rich quick. So they invest for cash flow. They rather than they're looking for a shortcut. Looking for the next get rich quick scheme. They're looking for the next hotspot rather than recognizing that residential real estate's a slow way to wealth. It takes up to 30 years to develop financial independence through real estate. And along the way, there's going to be barriers along the way, challenges along the way, finance difficulties, and you're going to make mistakes. They also don't recognize that property is a game of finance with some houses thrown in the middle. And I think the other big mistake actually is they don't protect themselves. They don't have the right risk mitigation strategy. Right. Insurance, the right asset protection structures. So there's a whole litany of mistakes, and that means that 50% of people getting residential real estate sell up as an investment.
Yes.
Sell up the first 5 years.
Okay.
And of those who stay in, less than 8% end up with more than two properties. So most property investors fail.
Right. Okay. Very interesting. So if people were to take one action to get different results in terms of changing their mindset, what would you suggest to them?
Well, I've already talked about the concept of personal development and learning and improving and educating yourself. So one step would be to read the right things, to learn from the right people, to speak to people who've achieved what you want to achieve. And I think the other really would be to hang around the right people. Your peer group makes a big, big difference. So if you hang around a lot of people who are physically fit and go to the gym and exercise on bikes and wear Lycra, then you're more likely to be fit and look after your body and exercise as well. Similarly, if you hang around people who whinge and complain and blame the government and blame the finance system and blame their boss and blame the taxes, you're not likely to be successful. But if you actually want to change your mindset, hang around people who are positive.
Yes.
Are proud of others' successes rather than the tall poppy syndrome of knocking people down. People who are resilient and prepared to get up one more time when things go wrong, because that's one thing that no one tells you about, how difficult the journey to success is.
Yes, that's a very good point. They just like the pretty pictures on Instagram and or shouting out about their achievements, but you don't see what that person's actually been through to get to that point.
That's a really good point, because what you're doing is seeing their showreel. You're seeing their highlights. You're not seeing all the cuts on the editing floor that they've cut out the bits that didn't work.
Exactly. If only. We could just have the highlights. So you wrote a fabulous book, which I really love, with Tom Corley, Rich Habits, Poor Habits. And I'm just wondering, in terms of the findings as a result of your research, was there anything that you found that very surprising or something, that shocked you about the findings?
Well, Rich Habits, Poor Habits came out of a collaboration with myself based in Australia and Tom Corley, who's based in the United States. Tom's a CPA and much, much more analytical than me, and I'm big picture. So Tom looked at it in a different way. He studied close to 200 rich people and 183 what he called poor people. Again, compared to some parts of the world, they were quite wealthy, but they were the lower socioeconomic groups in America. And he tabulated it and came up with long spreadsheets and great detail about their daily habits. He worked out what they do from when they get up to what they go to sleep and saw if there were some similarities.
Yes.
The way I handled it was I'd actually mentored personally over 2,000 people over the last decade. So I'd seen people's successes and people's failures. And interestingly, I saw it maybe on more a macro level. Tom tabulated and saw it on a micro level. But not surprisingly, we came up with similar conclusions.
Mm.
The reason the rich keep getting richer is because of the way they think. And that leads to the way they believe about things, their habits, their actions, and the results. So I read many years ago in a book that your thoughts lead to your feelings lead to your habits, and your habits lead to your results. So your internal world leads to your external world. And we're all driving around, walking around, I guess, with empowering beliefs.
Yes.
And disempowering beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We've all got some rich habits.
Yes.
And we've got some poor habits.
Mm.
And so while I thought about beliefs, Tom saw them as habits, using different words for the same thing. And what I learned from all this was that people have what I call a wealth operating system, a thermostat set to a particular level.
Yes.
And it brings people back to that level of comfort. So let's use Donald Trump as an example. He's a billionaire. We may or may not like his politics or his business style, but if he was a millionaire, a multimillionaire, he'd feel poor. And he has been a multimillionaire, and he's actually been poor, and he's been bankrupt, and he'd gone back to that level again.
Mm.
So his thermostat is set for billions. The average Australian's thermostat is set for thousands. And if they suddenly get more because they get a raise, they get a bonus, they win the lottery, they lose it.
Yes.
And so, you know, I believe he took all the money in the world and distributed it evenly, it'd be back in the same proportions again after, I don't know, 3-4 years. And that's because people's thermostat. So that's what I was reinforced by Tom's study and mine, that for you to get rich, you've got to develop rich habits. Not all of them. There's a whole lot listed in the book. What you've got to be able to do is get rid of some of your poor habits and replace them with a couple of rich habits.
Mm. Well said. Well said. Is there anything else you would recommend in terms of someone that wants to get to the next level, so get the thermostat higher, so to speak, in terms of their wealth?
Well, I think first thing is to recognise where you are and why you are where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you are where you are because of all the decisions you've chosen to make and all the decisions you've chosen not to make.
Right.
And you can't blame other people.
No.
Because where your listeners are today in Australia or in the Western society in general, we're living in the best country in the world and the best time in history when people can, from all walks of life, become wealthy.
Yes.
Now, that doesn't work in other parts of the world currently today, but in Australia, you are where you are because of the things you've chosen to do and the things you've chosen not to do. And a lot of us are in it for short-term get-rich-quick or quick fixes, and so you've got to actually learn the concept of delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So what you've got to do is plan to become the person you plan to become. You've got to plan your future, and by having a plan, I guess you're bringing your future into the present so that you can actually do something about it now. And that usually means sacrificing in the short term,
yes,
whether it's financially or in other ways, to actually secure your financial future in the long term. For others, it's actually sacrificing the short term so you keep going to be educated, keep going to university, college, whatever, doing your apprenticeship, so in the long term you've got something behind you. Much the same in relationships. The people who are successful are the ones who've learned delayed gratification. Warren Buffett said it cleverly, wealth is the transfer of money from the impatient to the patient.
Yes, fascinating. It most certainly is. And I think that's a lesson for a lot of people, particularly around patience. And being impatient is actually forms part of a scarcity mindset, right?
Yes,
because you're always fearful that, you know, you're going to miss out on something or something won't happen. And so you get that, you get very impatient for something to come about when you put the work in.
Of course, it's a lot to do with our culture now. I mean, years ago, you had to save money to buy something.
Yes.
They weren't credit cards when I was very young. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, the only way you could do things was save, or in those days there was something called lay-by where you'd put a couple of dollars a week in the shop and they kept it for you, and at Christmas time you'd pick it up or something like that.
Exactly.
Today, people spend money that isn't theirs. They yes. think the money in their credit limit and their ATM is theirs. It's not. It's the banks. You can go on to PayPal, so you don't need the internet, and you know, with one click you can buy something. You don't even have to put your credit card in. You don't have to pull your credit card out. You put your phone next to this little black thing in the shop and all of a sudden whatever you bought is yours.
Yeah, exactly right. That's very true too. Definitely. You know, like people that get married, for example, and they don't have a house full of furniture, they'll just go out and it'll be furnished within less than a week because it's so easy.
They think that they're doing a good job because they get those 3-year interest-free deals from the stores, but they don't actually then save up for that. So when the interest-free period goes and they're suddenly paying 18, 20% and their debt is there but the furniture's old, they get into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. So for you, Michael, what or who has been your biggest source of inspiration throughout your journey?
Well, I guess my mentors have changed over the years as I've grown. Similarly, I've had a number of business coaches. I think that was one of the big, big changes to the growth of my business and learning about people and learning how to deal with staff and with team members. So my business coaches have changed over the years and my inspiration has changed too. When I was young, a lot of it had to do with getting money and becoming rich because I felt insecure. And so my initial readings were people it wasn't much about real estate about real estate in Australia in the 70s and 80s when I started. So there were a few American books. In the 90s, Robert Kiyosaki was one of the real estate books that I read and I admired mm-hmm. a lot of his teachings. Having said that, I recognised that his ideas about real estate don't work in Australia, but his ideas about wealth were one of the early inspirations. Jim Rowan has been a virtual mentor. He's passed away, but I bought many of his programs. Brian Tracy, who I've had a chance to work with personally, and was a great mentor in sales and in business and in personal development. Interestingly, as a teacher, as a mentor for people, a number of my clients have been as well, because I learned from them, from yes. their successes, their failures, and I'm very proud of a lot of the people I've worked with. And I've surrounded myself with some good business partners as well. I couldn't have built the business that I have built without a good team of people around me.
Oh, definitely. It's super important. You hear that all the time, people trying to do everything themselves. When, you know, you're building a brand or a company, mm-hmm. it's so important to have that great team around you.
Many years ago, I went to a training, cost me $10,000. I think it was $10,000 each for Pam and myself, my wife. In the early 2000s, I was formulating the business that is Metropole today. It was in Coolum. Brad Sugars was one of my mentors in those days,
yes.
80s and 90s. And I formulated a plan of where I wanted to be. I learned this concept of becoming a leading expert. It was actually somebody in America who was the leading expert in creating leading experts. I didn't even know that. And I decided I wanted to be the leading expert in wealth creation through property in Australia. So I had to work backwards. What would that look like?
Yes.
In every state, I'd have to be respected by having multiple publications. The media would have to have me as a regular trusted commentator. And I worked through what it was, and then I worked backwards. So I set aside a plan, formulated a plan, and then I did what I had to do to achieve the end results. And along the way, there were stumbling blocks, there were obstacles. Brad Sugars was one of my mentors. Chris Howard, I learned a lot from him, and Roger Hamilton, people who I've shared the stage with over the years, all those
fantastic
people. But it's been good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So multiple mentors along the way.
Yes, and you have written quite a few books now.
Eight of them.
Eight in total.
That's my creative side. So when you do the various profile, personality profile test. So I'm what some would call a creator. So I'm not musical, I'm not artistic. So I enjoy coming up with new ideas. Interestingly, I think with a lot of the things I write, because I've got a blog that's been, property updates now, been voted for the last 2 years in a row, the world's, not just Australia's number one real estate blog, but it's also about success and about psychology. So I enjoy the writing side. That's the creative side.
Yes.
I've not come up over all that time with many original ideas. What I've done is I read a lot, I learn a lot, I learn from other people. I guess all of us have learned everything we know from somebody. You're not born knowing it. And what I've done, though, is I've adapted it, I've changed it, I've put from my years of experience on to that. So the writing in the books, in my podcast, the Michael Yardley podcast, in my blog, Property Update, that's where I believe it's partly my obligation now that I've reached the top to give back and help other people up. I think if more people did that, it would be a better world than trying to pull people down to your level.
Oh, 100%. I'm with you on that one, most certainly. So you've talked about a little bit about also wealth creation. What are three steps people could take today to actually change their level of wealth? What do you feel are the most important?
Well, first of all, you've got to we started this before, and I'm sorry, I get sidetracked, don't I, and I keep going off on a tangent. But first of all, you've got to recognise where you are today and understand that you are where you are because of all the things you've done and the things you chose not to do. Then what you've got to do is learn some of the disempowering beliefs that you've got, recognise the poor habits that you've got, and a really good way of doing that is reading our book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits, where you'll actually go through and say, oh, yeah, hey, that's me, that's what I do. You'll find some things resonate with you. So you've got to recognise them, and then you've got to remove these disempowering beliefs, like rich people are bad and dirty money and filthy rich and money doesn't grow on trees, and all these things that we heard about as a kid, and you've got to replace them with empowering beliefs. You've got to replace them with rich habits that you've got practice on a daily basis rather than the short term, and that will power you to success. And interestingly, recent studies have also shown that it will increase your IQ. So one of the fascinating things I learned in my studies of all this is IQ isn't fixed, and you can improve it by educating yourself, by doing aerobic exercise, by learning, by challenging yourself, and by keeping doing it.
Yeah, 100%. It's like the growth and fixed mindset that Carol Dweck talks about in her book as well. Yeah, we can increase it. It's like our abilities as well. Wherever we start, we can improve on that moving forward. Great advice there, Michael. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, I think a good lesson is that don't judge yourself compared to other people. We talked a little bit about this with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and things like that. Don't compare your chapter 1 or 5 with somebody else's chapter 30, because then you don't know what they've done to get there, but they're also probably 10, 15 years ahead of you. And your past does not equal your future. We've all done things we would have happily not done knowing what we know now. Experience is what you get about 2 minutes after you need it, I guess. But the answer is you can change your future because you can grow. I guess the flip side of that is unless you change, unless you grow, your future isn't going to change. Because your future is, I mean, my seminars, I say, who believes you've got a future? And everybody puts up their hands. And I actually say to people, who believes the future's fixed? And nobody does. So the answer is, your future is there waiting for you. Mm-hmm. And everything you do today, it's cause and effect. What you do today is going to create the future that you're going to have tomorrow.
Exactly.
So forget what happened in the past. Forget where you are now. It's a starting point. What you now have to do is do what you need to do to get to the future you want. And the only way you're going to do that is by having goals. So it's been shown over and over again that you've got to have goals, you've got to have plans, you've got to feel good about yourself and proud about yourself, and then move towards your goals.
Yeah, I love that. It's so true. And I mean, a lot of people unfortunately do get caught up in the comparison game. And you're right. No one's journey is the same. Everyone's on a different journey. So you can't compare. All you can do is celebrate other people's success, be happy for them, and also focus on where you want to go and where you want to get to, most importantly.
It's a really interesting, rich habit, because the average Australian doesn't celebrate other people's successes.
Mm.
They're jealous of their car, they're jealous of the house, they're jealous of the relationship or their wealth. But a rich habit is actually to not be jealous, but to actually be happy for them, be proud of them, and think that if they can do it, so can you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Get excited about it.
Definitely.
Use it as like a source of inspiration, momentum for yourself, rather than looking at it in another way, negative way. Mm. Yep. Well, it was awesome talking to you today, Michael. Lots of gold there. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Movement, where we help you shift your heart and mind to excel in every area of your life. We appreciate any comments and your support. Feel free to leave a review on iTunes and subscribe to our latest updates on angelinazimmerman.com.